This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 13th of December, 1952. The title of this lecture is Goal, Rehabilitation of Thetan, Case Step 1. This lecture is 65 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Second hour, Saturday night lecture, December 13. Mention again here something I mentioned much earlier, right on this point of auditing. The goal of 8-8008 and the goal of standard operating procedure includes all we can do for the thetan. Goal for the body is none. Must remember to remark on that. Every once in a while, so I'm remarking on it right here. Goal, then, is the rehabilitation of the thetan. And goal for the body, no goal. None. Now, that's laid down as an arbitrary to prevent you going down a rabbit warren that will lead you nowhere. Every once in a while, I'll audit somebody on a reverse one. Goal for the body, everything. Goal for the thetan, nothing. Even spring them and so forth, and then go right on operating with that body and body, care of the body, care of the body, and I slug along for hours and nothing much happens. The reason for this is if your thetan is up with his horsepower or thetan power, he will control the body so adequately that his presence and permeation, you might say, pervasion of the body area, has a tendency to straighten the body right on out. The body only really goes to pieces because of its knock-down, drag-out existence in a very hectic and quite inactive world. Nobody uses his body. He just sort of parks it around, drapes it on things, and so forth. He uses this as an anchor point. It's a rather expensive anchor point. It makes him work. He has to work it so that it can eat and all that sort of thing. So it's not so good. So when you're using standard operating procedure, you're trying to rehabilitate a thetan. You're not trying to rehabilitate anybody's body. You spring this person out of the body, and they might have a hunched back. The moment you spring them out of the body, sometimes you will tell them something like this. Is there anything you'd like to do to fix this body up? That's just so they'll get an anchor point straightened out. They'll find out, what do you know, I got an anchor point, and then you straighten out something in it, and they say, what do you know, this anchor point? That is my body. It just helps them orient. That's all. It's not because you want the body straightened out. Every once in a while, you spring somebody outside, as I say, got a hunchback or something's wrong with them, and you come around and you move them back in at the end of the session, or they stay outside, or whatever condition you finally wound them up in, and they walk away, and they don't have that infirmity. But they're much less likely to come up with that infirmity missing if you address the thetan only than if you address the body. You just spring this guy and work the thetan. Don't do anything for the body. If anything happens to the body, okay. If it doesn't happen to the body, okay. So what? Of course, these people go around wearing glasses all the time. That's rather strange, this idea of wearing glasses. Glasses are dangerous. Didn't they ever come to you? They're really very dangerous. And I watch people, and they don't seem to realize this. It's one of those things. Do you know what would happen to you if a bullet hit you in the glasses? Well, anyhow, off of those serious considerations, on to lighter ones. We will now take up case step one. Now, we took an assessment on this case. The reason we took an assessment on this case was a very good reason. We wanted to know what he couldn't do. We wanted to know where his inabilities were. And why did we do an assessment before we did standard operating procedure? Well, that's to get some kind of an idea what goes on before we spring the Thetan. Because it might be the last time you'll ever look at the Thetan's ridges. Not because he's going to do a bunk, as we say colloquially, means on his way over the hills and far away. He's just now passing Galaxy 18. There lies the body. It's not because we need him for identification. It's because it may be the last time we look at the combined effect of the Thetan's ridges and the GE's ridges. And we can get some kind of an estimation on where we're going when we do some later assessments, rather. You know, after a Thetan has disconnected and all lines are off between himself and the body, you're reading the body. Thetan can be in a heck of an emotional state. And the body's got its hands on the E-meter. The Thetan is over on the mantle. You're not going to get any reading off the Preakler. He's on the mantle. So don't make a mistake on this. But a fellow who still has a few lines on the body, still has his ridges commingled with the body's ridges to a large degree, will read like mad on the E-meter for a long time. But we don't want to pull this one. We don't want to have a fellow theta clear. He steps outside and he's not connected to the body in any way. And after that, why, we stabilize him and get him up the line. And here's an awful lot of things wrong with him. Now, we haven't got any way to E-meter him. Unless we move him in and E-meter him. And then he's liable to stir up a lot of ridges and get caved in on and a few things like that, so you wouldn't want to do that to him. You got him outside and you made him a theta clear, and you did that in 2 hours. Now, after that, you say, well, see, what can't this fellow do? I don't know. I haven't got any idea if he's got any quirks and foibles or not. And there's no assessment possible. So let's take the assessment before we do standard operating procedure. That's all. And then remember that if we've got a stable theta clear, you use your E-meter on the next pre-clear. Not that one. If we rehabilitate this Thetan's ability to handle power, handle energy, and so on, he'll take care of this body one way or the other. It's up to him. They stop fooling around with the body, and they just make the body work after that, and the body's very healthy. By the way, did you ever see a working dog? You ever had any experience with working dogs? You know a lot of pet dogs, though. And they're neurotic. They're really neurotic. I had a dog one time named Tinker, a psychotic. That dog was crazy because every time this dog had jumped up on her master in her first few months, he had hauled off and he would kick her or beat her for jumping up and showing any affection. So Tinker was convinced that nobody liked her. She'd come around, jump up on everybody, and she was so rattled and so psycho by this time that you couldn't do anything with Tinker. I mean, you could, you know, jump on you with muddy feet and all that sort of thing. So you grab the dog's feet and you put them back down on the ground and give them a squeeze or something like that. Nothing was happening with Tinker. No matter how nice you were to her or anything else. And she was a very smart dog, obviously. She was a Belgian police. A pretty nice-looking dog, maybe about a year old, and was basically a work dog. So I took Tinker and started to teach her tricks. And I had her do all sorts of tricks that looked like hard work to her, but she took a great deal of joy in them. Oh, you know, jump through hoops and over sticks and do rollovers and grab things and selected articles and all kinds of odds and ends. The dog started to get sane. She was working. She had some use. She was being put to use. And I used to work her quite a bit. And when I went away and she stopped being worked, she started to spin in again. But during the period when she was being hard worked and under good heavy control, she wasn't looping. She was sane. Very sane. Now the thetan is about as sane as a spinning mouse when you first get him out. He doesn't know which end he's standing on or which side's up ordinarily. Because you're sitting there and he may have some confidence in you, he'll just sort of wait and find out what the cue is. But quite ordinarily, when he moves out, gee, he knows he's there and he shouldn't be there, and he hasn't got a good orientation at all, so you have to start in working. But let's take the GE. Let's compare the GE to the dog. Good level comparison. The GE is definitely an animal. And the GE has been pampered and petted. This thing couldn't get along and have chocolate ice cream sodas and rides on streetcars and Rolls Royces and fur coats on its back and not have to grow any fur and so forth, unless it had a smart thetan in there pitching. And it's goofy. It's really goofy. You just get waves of insanity coming off of the thing when you first start to fool around with it at all, if you start to look it over. It's just nuts. And the thetan feels very propitiative because he stole it. That's the open and short of it. He stole it. Of course, there isn't any such thing as stealing anything in the messed universe. Anything that's made out of messed that you didn't make isn't yours. Anything, including your body. There isn't anything anybody can own in the messed universe except what he himself makes. What he himself builds out of his own space and energy. It's all stolen goods. But a guy gets this sort of a proposition, it's not stolen goods. A guy's really had it foisted off on him in a big way. So he'll feel this guiltiness toward the GE, and the second you spring this guy out, most remarkable things will happen. He'll suddenly start to feel terrific propitiation for this GE. Oh, the poor body. Oh, my. Propitiation, propitiation, propitiation. And your main trouble in step one is to back him out and bring about some sort of an orderly relationship here. Because the truth told, if he suddenly said to this body, act, jump, work, be, body all of a sudden start to purr and get very happy, very sane, go to work. It's just as simple as that. There isn't any vast process has to be done on the body with this processing. But if he says, poor body, I've gotta feed it, and I've gotta pet it, and I've gotta pamper it, and I've gotta do something for it, and I've gotta cure all these dispersals, and I have to smooth it all out, and all that sort of, oh boy. The body just disperses here, and the ridges pop up there, and the entities are flaming in some other department, and it talks back to him, and it balks, and it won't move, and he's having a tough time with it one way or the other. There's only one way to treat it, and that's on the be, do, and have, and don't have level. Just direct command with no explanation. Only in that way does a body work well. But I've told you before, earlier in lectures, if you simply, no theta clearing or anything else, if we just do this, we're willing to take this body out and suddenly start driving it in the direct direction that we knew would be its ruin, and then drive it 3 times, 4 times, or 10 times as hard as anybody had ever driven one in that direction, boy, you just suddenly start to shine as smooth as silk. Oh, yeah. Because the big control mechanism is don't work it too hard. Take care of it. Make it a valuable article. All that sort of thing. It doesn't respond. All right, the GE that takes that attitude toward the body immediately will stop the thetan that takes that attitude toward the body immediately stops the GE's dispersing. and he stops this entity reaction, so on. Not by stopping them, but just by refusing to acknowledge they exist and by assuming his right of command and control of this organism. I explain that to you because I don't want you at any time, except on a, quote, just for the devil of it, unquote, reason, to use as a general approach getting the Thetan out of the PC so you can do something for the body. Now, it's much more popular out with the crowd, out amongst the Homo sapiens, to do something for the body. And if you were going to say something or other about it, why bother with that philosophy that I've just given you? This is your philosophy as an auditor, and this produces the results you want it to produce. But don't pull this one. Don't just move the Thetan out so you can do something for the GE, because you're dramatizing if you do that. You're propitiating your own GE and GEs in general if your sole concern is to get that guy out of the body just so he can do something for the body. See how nonsensical that is. You would be terribly concerned about your GE. Well, in view of the fact that everybody in this society has agreed wholeheartedly that it's care of the body, care of the body, care of the body, and just for variation, care of the body, care of the body, care of the body. If you were to take a little kid and let him eat when he wanted to eat and sleep when he wanted to sleep and leave him stuff all candy he wanted to stuff down his gullet and go and come and act and not sleep, and come in with wet feet and go out with wet feet and roll in the snow, boy, he'd probably be as healthy as they come. That isn't what makes him unhealthy. It's, now, Johnny, take care of yourself. You will catch cold. Continual running fire of you're weak, you're weak, you're weak, you're weak, you're weak. You can get sick. You're surrounded by danger. Don't have any self-confidence. Don't have any self-confidence. Don't have any self-confidence. You can't control that body. I have to control it here. Maybe that some of that doesn't sound too familiar is the modus operandi. But Johnny is a lot safer being permitted to walk the high-tension power line in his bare feet than he is being coddled about wearing his rubbers and carrying his umbrella to school. If he carries an umbrella to school, he'll probably get half-killed by the kids down the block. All right. So in step one, you've got the outermost simplicity you possibly have. It's just be 3 feet back of your head. It says in the book, move or step back. That's not right. It's be. They'll get out there better if you just say be. Not move, but be 3 feet back of the head. 3 feet's a better distance than 2 feet. Now, in order to accomplish this, you could make it complicated if you had the back of your preclear a foot from a wall. So you move the preclear out more than 3 feet from the wall. You want him to have at least 5 or 6 feet of leeway between himself and the wall and between himself and the two side walls. And you do not want him lying on a couch. You want him sitting in a chair. And you want the back of his head above the level of the chair. Why? Guy doesn't want to move into all that mess. He's got an idea about it. Matter of fact, you can feel through a bed. You can put a beam down through a feather bed and feel around. It doesn't feel good. And you ask the guy to move out. If he's sure he couldn't go through a wall, how can he be 3 feet back of his head? Most of them all of a sudden will start going through the wall and then not notice it's there. Then say, oh, gee, there was a wall there. I got to agree with that. Now, the whole thing on step one is just be a couple of feet back ahead. And we're going to assume the guy did. And break down this processing step by step, each time assuming that the preclear landed there. Now, what do you do next? Do you say, look around the room now? Oh, you're not seeing it all. Oh. Are you sure you have all the objects in place? Now, carefully locate all the objects in the room. Now, move back in your head and see where they really are. Do you say that? No. We'll have you up before the Grand High Thetan. And unless you could prove adequately and utterly that you had done it for randomity, you'd probably be convicted of mopery and dopery. Because this is one you should know, so that if you do it, you at least know you're doing the wrong process. We're not laying an injunction on you and saying, under no circumstances or at any time, louse up a thetan. This is not an injunction which is being laid down. I know a flock of them that could be stand lousing up from here to the end of eternity. No. I'm not laying down injunctions as to an ethic that you should follow. But you better know the right process. That's a crime, not knowing the right process. Okay. The doing isn't. The knowing, the lack of knowing would be the crime. So let's know that that's the wrong thing to do. And the right thing to do would be any one of many things which would enhance his ability to handle space and energy. If he can handle space and energy adequately, he'll be able to perceive perfectly. Oh, boy, you talk about perfectly. You talk about selective sight. A fellow could look at the top of this manuscript and then read through page by page without turning anything over. Selective depth of sight. He could see a molecule deep into this wall, two molecules deep, six molecules deep, clear through to the other side of this plastic, look in and see this side, back side of the plastic, look in a little bit, plaster, look in a little bit deeper, and see the rafter, the lath, look to the other side and see the lath and plaster sticking in there, and the brick, all the rest of it. He could see the whole works. Selectively. Or he could look at this wall and through to the next building and the next wall and through to the next building and the next wall. But he isn't going to do any of that if he has to agree with the mass universe so hard and that he doesn't dare have any force of his own. That's what the messed universe is telling him. If thou art, I shall not be, says the messed universe. So you better not be, fella. If the thetan becomes, the messed universe unbecomes. And so the more he's agreed with it, the less force he has. And the less force he has reduces his perception. And the reason it reduces his perception is because perception is done in terms of recognition of energy forms. One has to be able to command energy in order to perceive. Anybody wearing glasses, by the way, is afraid of light beams passing in and out of the optic nerves. And if you just scan them up and down the optic nerve a couple of times and around, have them look at the optic nerve, even while they're in their head, they'll find areas dispersing or they'll feel lumps of energy in there that are all gouged up. So they can't handle that much force that are on these optic nerves. And they just aren't handling the energy, the photon flow that comes in their eyes. So simple. Lack of perception equals lack of force. Force simply composed of energy and objects. To rehabilitate perception, rehabilitate the preclear's ability to handle force. What kind of force? Electronic force. It all roads lead to Rome on that one. Somebody comes along and says, What's the matter with this preclear? I'm not getting along so and so, and his ridges keep caving in, and his bank keeps falling in, and I keep digging him out of his head all the time, and he can't lift a finger, and he can't. What's the answer to it? He hasn't got enough energy, so his energy needs rehabilitating. Any process, then, that rehabilitates his concept of his own energy is a valid process to cure that. And there are dozens of these processes in creative processing. You mock up two fingers and have them on a wire, and just a mock up a little wire and stretch a little energy from the fingers to the wire and back and forth, and have little beams going out in various directions and sparks, and put the sparks together and take them apart and have ribbons of sparks. Anything has to do with energy. Now, where's responsibility fit in this? Responsibility is the experience manifestation of taking on command of energy. That's all. Responsibility is force. Willingness to be, use, and have, utilize, and own energy and objects sitting in space, that's responsibility. What is responsibility? It's the willingness to handle force. If you get a person who is not even vaguely willing to handle force, you've also got a person who is not capable of responsibility. If you get a manager who is afraid to hurt somebody, in other words, use force on somebody, you've got a lousy manager. That's the end of it. A fighting ship might have an awful lot of men on it who just hated the hell out of its captain. Might hate his guts from the word go and follow him to their deaths. Why? He used force. A person using force isn't trying to be liked. He goes way upscale to get liked, not way downscale in the mess to be liked. Entirely different thing. Responsibility and force are the same thing. Perception and force are the same thing. Energy, inability to handle energy would mean inability to perceive. Inability to perceive would be the inability to handle energy. He gets outside and he looks around the room and he sees nothing. He's got some vague idea that there might be a body sitting there. Kind of dark. Everything's sort of dismal. But he knows he's out of his head. He knows he's back of his head. He's got some vague look at a couple of hairs. They're clear, but nothing else is. This condition can occur. What do you do? Well, let's try to rehabilitate a little space by asking him, what are you afraid might be there? Not sarcastically, but so you can mock up something there. Oh, I don't know. My mother is the first thing that occurs to me. Okay, put your mother where your own body's head is. Now move her way out in front of your body. Now let's put another body of hers. Now let's just start filling the room full of mama's bodies. Let's really fill this room full of mama. Let's fill every nook, corner, and cranny full of mama. The guy will have a tendency to kind of draw into his head. This is why it's a good thing to have an assessment before you do that, because right there, Johnny on the spot, you already know he's scared stiff of mama. So if he said, I'd hate to see mama there, you know he's pitching. Because you've got that on an e-meter on the assessment already. He doesn't want to find in that space those things which he's afraid of. Those things he's afraid of really are those things he got a drop on when you did the assessment. So he moves out of his head and he can't perceive very well. Do you have him start looking at the head? You have him start doing this, doing that, monkeying around? He can't perceive well. That's number one. Now you can, of course, unmock things, mock them up again, and so on. But there's certain things that are standing right in his road. Now, a pre-clear works best out of his head. He works best, not in the body. Because as long as he's in the body, he kicks up ridges. He kicks up flows. Ridges will cave in on him. He's got poor orientation. He could be worked for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours in the body without bringing him up to the state he really should attain in a relatively few hours outside the body. That's why these processes suddenly have done this shift over. The test data resulting from these consistent experiments of how much better people got working outside the body compared to how much better they got working inside the body establishes without much question that a person working outside the body is mainly shifting postulates and is not much influenced by energies. Objects, ridges, that sort of thing. So, even if you're having some preclear that you know can get out of his head, mock up, just for the heck of it, move him out first. It's a good precaution to observe. If you're going to do some work on yourself, move out and do it if you're just sporadically in and out of the head. So, what do you have this fellow do? He can't perceive? Rehabilitate energy by rehabilitating fear of what he might find in space in terms of objects. Objects are much less dangerous than actual liquid flowing molten energy. An object is fairly safe, so he's willing to see an object. An object is a condensed piece of energy. As long as it's a condensed piece of energy, you've got to be able to handle energy to really handle objects. But the object is the easier thing to handle. That's why people want things in solid objects instead of fluid objects. All right, so you get him outside his head, And he looks around, and he can't see well, or the space is all knocked to the devil, and you don't know what on earth he's looking at. He said, I'm just back of the chandelier, and there's no chandelier in the room. I don't think he's kidding you. I don't think he's kidding himself. He knows he's out, and he is out. But a thetan depends on the body to orient him in space and time, because the body furnishes a present time set of anchor points. And he gets outside, and he loses his present time anchor points, and he doesn't know where the devil he is. Furthermore, space has caved in on him again, so he's got the room out of his nursery when he was a baby, and the bed he sees there is the bed he saw in his barracks during the war, and the girl who is standing in the corner and keeps look at him is one of his nurses. Lord God, he's all fouled up, and he knows it. You let him worry about this? Not for a second. You say, okay, you see a nurse over in the corner, that's fine, turn her dress pink. Turn it blue, turn her upside down, put her in another corner of the room. He said, well, for heaven's sake, there she goes. Well, I guess I wasn't seeing spooks, that's wrong. You say, all right, now take that chandelier. He told you he was behind the chandelier, so you don't say, there is no chandelier. You say, he says, behind the chandelier. You say, all right, take the chandelier and exchange it for a statue standing upside down. Now put the statue right side up, wrong side up, make it float horizontally, put it over on the south wall, put it on the north wall. Now don't get him shifting things around in relationship to his body, because he's not in his body. And don't get him shifting and relating things before and behind him, because he probably doesn't quite know which is ahead and behind him. And you get it with Thetan looking both ways simultaneously, he's capable of seeing in 360 degrees. And he'll put the right-hand wall and the left-hand wall on a superimposition sometimes. And sometimes he'll see a chair standing over there on the right-hand wall over on the left-hand wall. Or he'll see its back on the left-hand wall and its seat on the right-hand wall. Why? Because he's looking with 360-degree spherical vision. So, of course, he mixes up his dimensions and crosses them. Until he's got space under control, he may continue to do this. So don't worry too much about this. You just give him general directions about walls. And if he's spooky about walls, have him put some walls in. Now say, put a north wall in. He says, which way is north? Make up your own north. Okay, that's north. He's way out back of his head someplace, probably holding on to a couple of molecules against the wall for dear life. You say, all right, that's north. Now, right there, take that statue you just mocked up and turn it right side up and put it against the south wall and so forth. In other words, take the items of this room that he perceives and turn them into something else. Then shift them around. And if you've got e-meter assessment data, have him fill the room up and start handling from where he is the things which he can't handle. Because he's actually afraid those things exist in the space where he is existing. He's stuck on the time track, in other words. And the way you get him unstuck on the time track is to put into the time he thinks he's finding mock-ups of the position on the track until he can handle them, until he says, well, the heck with this time, I'll move to some other time. Now, there's another system you can use to bring him up to present time, which is nowhere near as good. That is to say, you can say, pick up this room when it was constructed, move it on forward to present time, then move it right on forward into the future. He's liable to hit that on any of five tracks, and it doesn't lead to a certainty. What's the test of a good technique? The test of a good technique and the gradient scale of the goodness of techniques would be the gradient scale of certainties. So a technique which leads to a certainty is superior to a technique which leads to a partial certainty. So scanning the room through, he might hit any one of about five tracks. So that's not as certain as the other. But you can still do it, and it's still a good technique. Once in a while, in desperation, do it. And once in a while, just for the hell of it, do it. Find out what happens. All right, you get two pre-clears, and you scan them up through this track, by the way, and they both arrive in present time again, and they'll have a heck of a fight. One went on the imaginary track, and the other one went on his own facsimile track. They didn't go on the same track. You scan them up through the history of the room. One says the room is going to burn up in 2 days, and the other one says it'll be here in the year 2006, at which time it'll be destroyed by an atom bomb. That's future havingness. That's going to be established by somebody. People are changing, having this all the time within the agreements of change. So the will have is not certain. But the has, present time, has, present time, of course, can still exist from the past. That's a static. I mean, that's a lump. That's just, it's because you see it's easy, because that's just a mass of illusions, and they've agreed they do have, and then agreed they don't have. All right, so we get him up the track. How do we do it then? We're trying to find present time. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to put the Thetan in present time with some space in present time. We moved him out of his head and he couldn't see well. Boy, that is the most average case you'll get. He moved out and he couldn't see. Or what he did see was all haywire. So just have him take all the objects he sees and change them into something else, doesn't matter how ridiculous, turn them upside down, plaster them around the neighborhood, move them, change them in position and time and color, age and size, and throw them away. Ask him once, well, what do you see now? Now, how does it look to you? Very, very strange, because he will not take this usually as a checkup on his perception. And really, what you want to know, when you say, how does it look to you? You only want to know this. What else have we got to mock up around here? You're not looking around, by the way, to find out what there is in the room he has to change. Mm-mm. You're looking at what he's looking at. You don't care what's in that room. The second he lost his body, he lost his orientation point, because there went his havingness. So his time went shot. If he hasn't got his havingness, of course, he's all fouled up on time instantly. And he has an insecurity on his havingness now, because he suddenly realized he's not that body. That body owns things. He doesn't. He knows all sorts of things. So the second his havingness is upset, that is to say, he no longer has a body, he's all out of gear. But as a Thetan, he was kind of out of gear, too. He was sitting inside this dark hole looking at a flock of facsimiles that came in. And he wasn't quite sure where he was, but the ridge said 1952 Philadelphia. Well, he'd buy this better than anything else. He knows that when a doorknob appears on that ridge, he can work a certain set of bars and things like that in a kind of a hopeless little prisoner way, and the doorknob will turn and open. He doesn't run into something. He doesn't know he's there. He doesn't want to be there. So you can just count on it that he's not in present time, that he's not perceiving well. If you suddenly find him perceiving perfectly, boy, stand by to be stunned. Because that almost never happens. A Thetan that would have enough power would have enough power to see perfectly to be kind of doubtful if he was in a body. Because if he had that much power, he can use power like mad in all directions. So, you drill mock-ups. And then get him to drill mock-ups of beams. And get him mock-up beams before you make him use beams, for the good reason that once in a while, you'll move out an invader force, and he will get sick as can be at the thought. He'll start to use energy, and then all of a sudden a feeling of terror and degradation will come over him of such magnitude that it will cause you a lot of trouble. He'll start to use it, and all of a sudden he's saying, oh my God, I'm... And he'll recognize, and he will remember what he is and kind of know where he comes from and so forth. He'll dive right back into the head, splash, and he won't come out again. So don't ask him to use energy, really, unless you run down to the lower steps so you make him feel degraded. You can handle that. All right, you move him out, do mock-ups on handling energy, do mock-ups on being hit by balls of energy, do mock-ups of things appearing in the space which he has, put out spaceation, that sort of thing, until you've moved his perception up the line a little bit. Now you have him knock apart. Every time he's talked to you, he hasn't seen the body. The body's lost. It's there someplace. Or every time he starts to look at it, it's black. It's just a black lump. Well, you have to start mocking up the body and knocking it off, and mocking it up and knocking it off. And then you mock up the selective parts of the bodies, the arms, the legs, the hands, everything you can, and you just start. Well, now you can still read this pretty clear on an E-meter, you understand, if he didn't have good perception, because he's hooked to the body by communication lines, and he'll register and reactivate the ridges with what he's thinking. So he's still sitting there with this E-meter on, and you just run each one of these mock-ups until he is stable on it. You've got an assessment there, you see. Anyhow, you just run that assessment. If you haven't got an assessment there, just start filling the room up and tearing up things and changing things and so on and using energy. Now, when he gets up to a point where he actually has some perception, he can see the body. You mock up the body and knock it off until at last he realizes the body isn't the powerful brute he thought it was, and he's willing to look at it. It doesn't emanate all his energy at him and so forth. You just go right straight in to lifting exercises. By lifting exercise, we mean you're getting to a point where he can move around without snapping back in and stand above the hand. If he can't do that yet adequately, we mock him up some more on handling energy, handling forms, positioning things in time and space, putting out anchor points, and occasionally unmocking things. In other words, we just go through this drill, and we're working up to get his perception on. We're getting his perception on by handling energy. And when we get his perception on, then we just get his perception on to a point, not where he can count every slightest thing, but where he can lift one finger. And he will get the strangest sensation. He start to lift this finger, and it'll slide sideways or something like that. And up to that time, it's halfway imaginary to him, maybe, that he's outside. It's kind of imaginary, and it flicks on real and real. He kind of knows he is. He's willing to say he is and so forth, and he's perceiving all right, but not too good. And you get him around here, and he's working a hand, but it's possibly a mock-up, too, that he can't quite control. He's got that little uncertain feeling on the thing, and then he, all of a sudden he feels this finger pull out like that without any energy. You can get the feeling yourself. You'll just reach over, just put your hand down, and just suddenly move the finger over with your other finger. You can tell very immediately, you see, that you aren't moving the finger internally. Now make the finger move like that without shifting it from outside. You've got an entirely different sensation there. All of a sudden, he'll recognize this sensation. My God, yes, I am. What do you know? Oh, gee. He's liable to fly immediately inside, at which time you coax him out and rehabilitate him again. You rehabilitate him by getting him cuffed with hands or anything else. Get him outside again. Bring him around here and get him working on that finger again. Well, you can work on that finger by stretching up a couple of anchor points. Hang two anchor points on the ceiling. Got two anchor points there? Okay, now look at those in relationship to the finger. Now pass a line from one end around the finger and up to the other one. You got that? Okay. Now push the anchor points apart. Finger comes up. Got that? Or you have him build a tripod over the finger. That's not nearly as good. It makes him feel like a grasshopper. Which he's not. And there are a lot of angles you can use. And it's very, very interesting. Of course, if you take two anchor points up here above his head and pass them down to the finger and postulate that they're holding on to the finger and postulate that they're okay up there now that the line won't stretch, you move the anchor points apart further and naturally the finger's going to lift up. Matter of fact, when you start to pick up a whole arm or something like that, you can just slap those anchor points apart simultaneously and it'll lift that arm up in the air like it's in an express elevator. Okay. You're working up toward that. No matter how slow or by what gradient scales you work toward that, you do lifting exercises until he can at least adequately lift a couple of fingers and drop them again. And you don't leave the lifting of fingers until he can lift and drop with fair rapidity. You let him fool around with fingers until he's really confident. And he drops them, picks them up, cuts them loose, picks them up, cuts them loose, picks them up, cuts them loose. Generally, somewhere along the line, he'll say, you know, I think I can lift two or three. You say, try two. You pick those up and drop them, pick those up and drop them. It'll be very interesting to him. You keep up that exercise and get him moving around with a hand, the arm, the other hand, the arm. And the next thing you know, you're going to have a guy's concept of his own power upstairs very quick. And I am sure much, much faster than by any other method I know at this time. But you understand clearly that these lifting exercises, you address the, quote, actual, unquote, which means the pre-clears mock-up, and then address the, quote, unquote, real, which means the mesh universe hand that he owns. You're beginning your lifting exercise. You know he can see his hand. He finally tells you that. Well, that's time to begin him. Have him mock up another hand and handle this mock-up and monkey around with the mock-up and position it in time and space for a while. And then mock up the finger and then make it bigger and bigger as a mock-up until it becomes utterly incredible. Now, let's have a hand the size of Philadelphia, and now let's get a finger that weighs 8,675,000 tons, and now let's just say up finger and have it lift. Okay, you got that? Drop it back again. He'll say, it smashed the Penn Station. You'll say, okay. Okay, now put all that in last week. And now we'll address the up of his hand. And he'll feel very powerful the first moment he does it. He'll say, well, that's all right. I can do that, I guess. And then all of a sudden, nothing happens. And nothing happens. And he'll fool around with this. And you say, come on, put a tractor beam on it. Pull it on up. No, that's right. Wrap it around there. He can't do it yet. Have him mock up a hand again. Do it to the hand. Keep his confidence up by getting him to operate the mock-up properly until he can lift his body's hand. Then from there, go on to all the fingers, the hand itself, the forearm, the arm, the other fingers of the other hand. You just go back to lifting one finger again when you shift over to the other arm. Then the hand of that arm, then the forearm, each time practicing particularly on a fast disconnect. You get a fast lift on both arms before you go for the feet. And when you get down to the feet, make the toe of one foot shift. And then finally make the ankle turn one way or the other. And then finally start picking up the leg. You'll have this guy flying through the air in no time. Then you finally pick the body up. It's a great shock to them when they do that. Well, all the time, this guy's concept of his own energy is best stabilized by the realization that he is handling something which he has been having trouble handling. And the dispersals in the body get very quiet and the entities shut up and everything calms down. You're rehabilitating energy. Of course, his perception turns up when you do this. He gets to be very tough. He gets to be 9,642 feet tall in this process. Now, after you've handled the body in this fashion, after you've handled the body very excellently and adequately in this fashion, you make some tests of the body. Have him stay outside, and you'll find out while he was handling the body, he had a tendency to snap in whenever he hurt himself by lifting too hard on a finger or something. So he had a tendency to snap back into his head. So you just skip that. And you just have him do it again. So he snapped back in, just move him out again and start in again. You make sure that even though the body's hurt, that is to say, clip it on some of its nerve centers. You ever have the doctor pound on your knee with a little mallet? Well, pound on his knee with a mallet. Get some nerve reactions, so forth. Don't mangle him particularly. But see if he has a tendency to move in. That's what you mark, the tendency. It isn't hurting him badly and having him move in. If you snap him just a little bit, or he's nervous about your snapping him, and he gets a little bit closer to the head if you start to snap. Nuh-uh, he's not a theta clear. You have him out there, so he just leans up against the wall and says, well, okay, bash its head in. Now, if he continues to be nervous about the head, snapping back into the head every time you start to tap him or something like that, or pinch him a little bit, there is another drill, and I don't know how far to advise you on this other drill. And I'm just going to say it in passing and leave it up on a test basis. Because I would not go so far as to advise you to get anybody to handle somebody else's body. It should be adequate for you to just have him throw his own body around some more until he can really throw that body around. That's from outside. He's picking up the body from outside. And that is, you would go up along the level of taking hold of somebody's ear down the street and make them turn their head. Make attention or get the attention from the outside of another body. Legitimate test. I haven't tested it out too much. I would go from there to monkeying around with other messed objects that were intimately his and so on. And fool with them, develop some more energy. When he finds out that he can lift something else besides his body, he will feel then that he can attract somebody's attention. You've solved a problem. How does he stay in communication? But I seriously doubt that this individual will be very upset about coming back in if he's handled his body by lifting exercises. As I say, if he is, well, there's two ways to go about it, and that's rehabilitate him a little bit further up toward an operating thetan, which we will cover at some length, or make him handle objects so that he can more closely rehabilitate himself. Make it so he's fairly sure he can communicate when he gets outside. Or he could attract somebody else's attention. Now, one of the things that will set back a one is the fact that he goes around and long before he's got much horsepower, he's ready to do anything, he'll start helping somebody else or pulling their ridges off or doing some darn thing. He's liable to have a ridge blow up in his face. He's liable to get sick. Body's liable to get sick. He hasn't increased his horsepower any to amount to anything. He starts fooling around, and he'll start going here and going there and doing this and doing that before he is stable outside of his body. And he's just causing the auditor more trouble. So the time of auditing that goes in on this ought to be fairly rapid. If you get a guy one, or you get a guy outside of his head and he knows he's outside of his head, any time you've got that condition, move right on through with the alternate mock-up and lifting exercises until you've got the guy stable outside. If you leave him too long or just let it drift too long or something like that, he's going to go out and get himself in trouble. Now, what do you do with somebody who has a persistent and continual perceptic shutoff on some particular selective thing? That means that he has an unwillingness to handle force on that one thing. If it's sound, he's generally worried about explosions because out in space, in places where a thetan has been, the only time he heard sound was in the middle of disaster. And that was when energy hit him, and the energy acted as a conductive unit of sound instead of air. Air being a specialized kind of energy. This is raw energy. Something blew up, went kapow. And the only way he could have heard the kapow in the airlessness of space was when it was conducted by the electricity of the kapow. So a sound or a sudden sound is to him a blow, and this blow is an invalidation. He becomes convinced that he can be hurt by sound, which is a no good conviction at all, because he can't be hurt by sound unless especially rigged supersonic. How do you do this? Have him mock up wet firecrackers and things exploding. Now, anywhere along here, creative processing can apply. You'll find out that you've got some specialized cases, and you should have gotten in the assessment, if you'll just go through these parts of the body and the dynamics and relatives on your assessment, if it's as thorough as that, you've got his disabilities. And if you've got a lot of these can'ts, you've got a lot of material to work on. You can work these can'ts up to the time when you're able to enter in and begin the lifting exercises. And he'll come up to the point where he can lift or get up to the point of the lifting exercise if you work out his can'ts with mock-ups. See? You moved him out. He's out. Now what do you do? Well, you don't let him immediately try to solve all the problems of the world. He's a terrible shock to him. You take your list of can'ts. You take his condition of perception. You start filling up space with the space around him with objects he doesn't want there, Or if the space consists on being full of objects he doesn't want there, you fill it fuller for him by just telling him to put more in, and more in, and more in, and more in, until he says finally the devil with it and starts kicking them out. You answer up to his feeling of scarcity about bodies by having him walk up and handle the various bodies of people that he's been upset about in his past, and particularly his own body, mocking it up and cutting it to pieces. So there's your level of operation. And all the time his perception is getting better and better and more certain. You'll find the disabilities. Remember that he will have these, and these are important to you because by these you rehabilitate his ability to handle energy in space, and his cancer, things that he would hate to find in space. If he's not willing to create and he's not willing to destroy something, he'd also hate to find it in space. He might like pussycats and think they're just wonderful, but if you process him long enough on the things, there'll be only one thing you can think of, and that is destroy the dickens out of him, because it's a big overt act. He's probably most of the time dramatizing. If it's elephants that he's afraid of, he's probably done an overt act against elephants and so forth. All kinds of things that you can find then in camps are used, and if used, will improve perceptics. And then every time you're running these camps, slip in some energy, some raw energy. Ribbons, flows of water, raw energy manifestations. When the pre-clear has a body out there and you have this body dissolve, every once in a while have it dissolve down to a pool of raw crackling energy. Just having it swell out and then roll up into big balls of blue lightning, which you turn red and turn blue and then roll them out the window and have them explode outside or something of the sort. Just rig in there someplace every once in a while, as much as he can take it, some raw energy. And then, as I say, he's heard these explosions and that sort of thing, so every once in a while, why mock up something like a wet firecracker blowing up or something on this order. Make it big and rough at first. They're really charry, these explosions. The dispersal parts of the band are tough for a guy to get in there. When are the lifting exercises? You generally will have a theta clear who's quite stable outside of his body. If he isn't, bring him up scale a little bit higher. And there we handle one. Really nothing to one. That'll be 50% of your cases. I've given you a formula for handling him. That formula will work for you, providing you do one thing. Listen to what the pre-clear is telling you. It'll work particularly well if you have a good E-meter assessment. Very well if you have a good E-meter assessment. Now, there's one kind of one that you must know about, and that is the one who does a bunk. You say, be 2 feet back of your head, and wham! Gone. The body sags. It's just a rag doll, and there you sit. You say, hey. Hey, whoa. Where are you? That is passing by Galaxy 13. On their way out, they think there is an out in that direction. They don't want anything more to do with it. They generally will be running the glee of insanity. Their feeling of irresponsibility is such that they just bang. You just sit there and you persuade them. Oh, that's a horrible feeling, by the way. It might happen to you quite suddenly. It's always completely so fast you don't quite know, had any warning about it. So you make them make the right hand move, make the left hand move. They might be actually unable to make the body operate from this distance, or they might be blown out or something of the sort. This person's, my experience, has always got the glee of insanity very heavily. So you get them to get their postulates about how beautiful responsibility is, and they'll say it's not. Don't want anything more to do with it. You get into an argument with them on that when you finally get them back in. Yeah, you can sit there for quite a while. You just persuade them to finally wiggle their fingers. You don't have to give them a big sales talk, but sometimes think of your poor auditor as the last ditch. Think of the family. Think of these various things. Think of your poor auditor. The toughest one I know of came home on that. And That's the problem. Don't let it rattle you. Don't let it worry you, because this preclear will come back. Preclear won't if you get hysterical and walk off or run away. So what do? You just get them to work their right hand and their left hand, get them to work their head a little bit this way, and all of a sudden, they're okay, and they'll animate again. But boy, that's the deadest looking body you ever saw when somebody does a bunk. Now, there's another slightly different case that does something peculiar that is not really much different than that, because they have the same thing wrong with them, glee of insanity. Make them mock up people going mad and make them mock up people being very sane and very staid and very responsible and people going mad and have people sane and responsible and with terrible weights and people walking around with the world on their back and then turn the world upside down and put it in front of them and behind them and then have the people who are very staid and do all this all of a sudden start to laugh with an insane laughter and so on. Do kinds of mock-ups like that that demonstrates turning seriousness into complete insanity. And insanity into seriousness, and so on. You get quite a kick out of this, by the way. It's very amusing. But this other person does a bunk unwillingly and is still in communication, and does it by accident. They get blown out of their head. You say, be 2 feet back of their head, and it unsettles them for a moment. And they go kapoom. They'll land and plaster up against the ceiling or something. And then they'll be up there against the ceiling looking down at the room, running kind of glee of insanity with some kind of an old body or something of the sort. And they're right there in the room and they can see you and they'll just jeer at you. And the body will, although rather expressionless, will just say, yeah, you're no good. You're not going to get me back in. What do you think you're trying to do? And so forth. It's just talking like that. There's no motion to it. They're up on the ceiling somewhere. You can practically feel this insanity emanate off them. You do the same thing. You can just run a flow if you have to. If you can't think of anything else in a case like this, get the glories of being responsible, the glories of being not responsible, and so on. If you get so rattled that you can't think of anything else, remember, responsibility solves it. The best thing to do is to make them start mocking up sane people who suddenly go nuts and move those around in the room and turn them upside down, and nutty people who suddenly turn sane, and people carrying the world on their back, and people carrying the mass universe on their back, and dumping it off onto other people's backs, anything that would have to do with picking up objects and being responsible for them, or acts, any kind of such creative processing. Now, that's both the same kind of case, really. They both do a bunk, but one of them does a bunk and looks dead, and the other one just does a bunk and lands on the ceiling and can't get back into the body. Actually can't get back into the body. They both are expressing glee of insanity. Both of them. Fruitcake, strictly. The Thetan comes out raving mad. It's very easy to put the Thetan back into a good state of operation, however, because the Thetan is not so raving mad as Homo sapiens high up the tone scale. But the Thetan's raving mad. Well, now, there's several other things that it mentions here in step one that you could or couldn't do. All that sort of thing. You can have them repair items in the body, as it says there. You do various things if you want to. The only reason you really do that is just orienting on the body. And I don't want to get the idea that that's important, what he does to the body. It's not. You want to get him up to a state if the body stops breathing or something. So he simply can go pick up another body. Body's very cheap. Very cheap. They have 97 cents worth of chemicals in them. And step one is a very easy step. Do a bunk is its only liability. 50% of your preclears will fall in this category. Don't muff it. I've given you a very interestingly simple, very simple process by which to solve it. If you don't depart from that, you'll get a case, step one, every time. Bang. Okay, thank you very much, and good night.